Okay, the next argued case is number 21-2311, SoClean Incorporated against Sunset Healthcare Solutions. Mr. Labbe.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, John Labbe on behalf of Defendant Appellant Sunset Healthcare Solutions. We raised two issues in our appeal, Your Honors, that of secondary meaning and functionality. I'd like to first address the issue of secondary meaning. This is a case about trade dress, and as the Court knows, in the context of trade dress, there are two different types of trade dress. There's product, there's trade dress in product packaging, and there's also trade...
It's also a case of a preliminary injunction.
It is a case of a preliminary injunction.
That's reviewed on an abuse of discretion. And the trial court was very careful and issued a very narrow preliminary injunction.
That is correct, Your Honor. The district court did issue a narrow injunction, but it nevertheless did so in making several errors in finding that the plaintiff is likely to succeed on the issue of secondary meaning in this case.
I hate to interrupt your train of thought, but I just thought maybe this is opportune to ask you, what's the current status of this case? Is it proceeded to trial, or is it?
The case has not proceeded to trial, Your Honor. There are a number of motions pending at the district court that have not been decided. There is a motion pending to enforce a settlement agreement, Your Honor, and that is pending before the district court. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's enough to know. I just wanted to know if it was anything dispositive had been done so far. Right?
Nothing dispositive has been done, Your Honor. Yes, correct.
So, sorry to interrupt your chain.
Not at all, Your Honor. But I would like to address the errors that the district court made in reaching this conclusion. In the case of product configuration trade dress, the Supreme Court has said that product configuration can only be protected as trade dress upon a showing of secondary meaning, upon acquired distinctiveness. It can never be inherently distinctive, and that's very important because product configuration, the configuration of a product itself, typically does not serve a trademark function. It typically does not serve as a source identifier, and therefore, if you go to the trademark office and seek a registration, you're required to present actual evidence of acquired distinctiveness in order to obtain a registration on product configuration.
So there are a lot of arguments in the brief, so I'm getting confused on which one you're talking about. So are you now on your argument about there was no presumption that should have inured here, or are you now arguing on even if you had the burden, you met it? Can you be a little more specific?
Yes, Your Honor, and I was just teeing up the issue somewhat, but I would say that the argument that we're making is that, yes, there's a presumption, but it's been overcome here, and we think that the district court made two different errors.
Overcome because the registration was faulty and shouldn't have been issued, or overcome based on the record in this case?
Both issues, Your Honor, yes. So we think that the district court made two mistakes here. We think the district court made a mistake in giving too much deference to the trademark examiner, where there was never any evidence of actual, no actual evidence of secondary meaning was presented to the trademark examiner. And we think the district court made an error by applying a heightened standard of proof that called upon our client to present vigorous evidence that there was no secondary meaning. What happened in this instance is that the trademark examiner issued the registration based only on a declaration of 5 years of use. But the declaration of 5 years of use is not evidence that the product configuration has been used in a trademark way. And that's what's important.
Yeah, but the problem for you is the law. You can't. You could have opposed the registration, the application, which you did not do. And it seems quite clear that at this stage of the game, the district court is not free to reassess the validity of the initial thing, and that there's a presumption of validity. And there's a statutory requirement: registration shall be prima facie evidence of the validity of the registered mark. So you're saying that in this instance, the district court in a preliminary injunction should have reevaluated whether the registration was properly issued in the first instance and not applied the statutory presumption. Is that your argument?
Well, the statutory presumption would apply, Your Honor, but we're talking about what needs to be shown to overcome that statutory presumption.
Okay, that's a different issue. Okay, so that's whether it's and it's preponderance of the evidence.
Correct, right? Your Honor, but I think it's very important that acquired distinctiveness must be demonstrated because this is an application under Section 2F of the Lanham Act that requires a demonstration of acquired distinctiveness. And Section 2F does allow for the possibility that 5 years' use can be prima facie evidence, but that does not apply in this instance because what the statute calls for, is what the statute says, is that 5 years' use may be prima facie evidence that the mark has become distinctive because with proof of substantially exclusive and continuous use thereof as a mark. There has to be evidence that the product configuration was used in commerce as a mark, that it was used in a trademark
way. So again,
way.
Are you questioning the initial registration and asking the judge not to apply the presumption of validity based on that registration?
I think it's a little bit nuanced, Your Honor, in the sense that I'm not saying that, no. What I am saying, however, is that the district court may look at the evidence and should look at the evidence that was presented to the examiner in considering whether there was ever any evidence, any actual evidence of secondary meaning. Here, the district court found that there was no actual evidence of secondary meaning attributed to this product configuration. The district court said there was a dearth of such evidence. And so where on the one hand, you have no evidence of secondary meaning in a product configuration, how can that be protectable as a trademark where there is no evidence that of secondary meaning with respect to that product configuration? I think that it's inconsistent both with the statutory requirement. It's also inconsistent with controlling case law. I would note that this the way that I'm emphasizing the statute 2F that the product configuration must be used as a mark is something that this court has recognized in In Re R.M. Smith that we cite in our brief at page 17, emphasizing that same language, finding in that case that 8 years of use of a product wasn't enough because it wasn't demonstrated that the product was used in a trademark way. And as the First Circuit noted in the Yankee Candle case, yes, using a product, extensive use of a product over a period of time is one piece of evidence, but it doesn't show that the product configuration is being used in a trademark way. Basically any product, anybody, after they've been selling a product for 5 years, could apply for a trade dress registration based on the shape of their product. They could obtain that trade dress registration. Your Honor correctly noted that we didn't oppose it. Our client didn't happen to know about it at the time.
There's notice, statutory
yes.
notice provided, so that's not... That's on you.
I understand that, but nevertheless, you can envision a situation like the one here where someone could obtain the registration without having to demonstrate sure. secondary meaning and then obtain a district court.
But the statute says that there'll be a presumption of validity given the registration. So you're saying that really doesn't apply or that only applies if your client knew about it and didn't challenge. I don't understand how you expect us to deviate. Has any circuit deviated from application of that requirement, notwithstanding questions that might be raised about the initial registration?
We're not saying that, Your Honor. We're not saying that there's not a presumption here. We are saying, however, that it's correct that the district court should not have ignored the evidence that was put forth in favor of the registration. The district court found that its hands were essentially tied because of the presumption, but the district court is authorized to find...
Well, you had the ability here to rebut the presumption under preponderance of the evidence.
Yes.
You had an opportunity to put on evidence, and the district court weighed the evidence and rejected your evidence. So,
well, but only by applying a heightened standard of review, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
But the district court said that it was on us to come forth with vigorous evidence to disprove.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, so that's your second argument, and I appreciate that. I just think, speaking obviously only for myself, that even though that phrase may be a little problematic, at the end of the day, it's kind of harmless error because her ultimate conclusion was that your evidence was equivocal at best. And I think that's the argument I think the other side makes, that it's kind of harmless error, because when you look at the entirety of her review of the evidence, she didn't deviate from the preponderance of the evidence.
So Your Honor, I would suggest that the district court would have reached a different conclusion in this case if it had not applied that standard, because we did have some evidence, and I know that the district court says it's equivocal, but there was some evidence. If you look at their advertising, they never advertised this feature as a source identifier. Instead, they tell...
The district court said Sunset has not introduced any survey evidence tending to indicate that SoClean's product design has not acquired a secondary meaning. And so ultimately it relied on the presumption of validity.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. We did not come forth with survey evidence, but survey evidence is not required. You can have circumstantial evidence as to secondary meaning or a lack thereof.
I think some rebuttal is required by the statute when there's a presumption, and I gather there wasn't any.
Well, there was some rebuttal in that we were pointing to the type of advertising that they use.
Rebuttal was attorney argument.
The rebuttal was circumstantial evidence, Your Honor. The rebuttal was pointing to the type of advertising that they used, pointing to the testimony of their chief marketing officer, who was unable to identify any knowledge that customers actually associate this design with the filter. I think that
But you're saying they didn't meet the requirement for the presumption, not that you met the requirement for rebuttal. Is that what I hear you saying?
Well, I don't intend to say it that way, Your Honor. I understand the issue here, as you're putting it, but to us, there has to be some evidence at some point required of the applicant that there was some evidence of secondary meaning. And here, the district court found that there was none, that there had never been any actual evidence. And I understand that there's a presumption, but that presumption to be overcome by a preponderance of the evidence, it seems to us that if on the one hand you've got a dearth of evidence, on the other hand you've got just a little bit of evidence, that should be enough to say that, look, the examiner made a mistake.
Are you complaining not about the presumption, but about the standard that they didn't meet the preponderance of the evidence, that you didn't meet the preponderance of the evidence standard? Your argument keeps on shifting. I'm sorry, but you keep on, there are two separate issues in my mind. And you keep on sort of moving back and forth between this presumption issue and then assuming there is a presumption, whether you met the correct standard, whether the district court applied the correct standard. And I'm getting a little confused.
We're not saying there's not a presumption, Your Honor. So if I make it sound like that's what we're saying, I don't intend to do so. But we are questioning what is required to overcome that presumption. And I think the first point I would
make... And is it not the preponderance of evidence?
Preponderance of the evidence, yes. The preponderance of the evidence.
So you're not disputing that as the legal standard.
That is what the cases have said.
So is your argument just that the district court got it wrong by concluding that you had not met the preponderance of the evidence standard?
Well, we think that the district court only reached the conclusion it did by applying a heightened standard, by saying that the standard was on us to come forward with vigorous evidence, and by also saying that its hands were tied and that it couldn't review what the examiner had done. We think that the statute expressly authorizes it to review what the examiner had done, and we think it's different than a patent case. Here they were proceeding under Section 2F of the Lanham Act that requires evidence of acquired distinctiveness. I'm not saying there wasn't a presumption once the examiner issued that registration. I'm just saying that the district court was then authorized to review that registration and to find that it should not have issued, that there was a likelihood of success on our side.
Counsel, at bottom we're talking about an abuse of discretion standard here. And I haven't heard that language. You're really arguing the merits.
Well, we're arguing that the district court applied an erroneous legal standard, which the First Circuit has said is always an abuse of discretion. So the erroneous legal standard was applying a heightened standard of review and finding that its hands were tied. I see that I'm running low on time. I don't know if you'd like me to address the functionality issue, or perhaps I should reserve my time.
Let's hear from the other side on these points.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Cox, when you're ready.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Brendan Cox. May it please the Court. The most important element of the entire petition to keep in mind is that the nature of the injunction that was issued is very precisely tailored narrowly tailored and appropriately evaluated after the judge's, after the district court's assessment of the evidence presented, and a correct application of the law to enjoin, so to speak, defendant appellant Sunset only from marketing, selling its identical, indistinguishable filters with no other markings.
We appreciate that, but is it, if we all agreed that the examiner, something went awry here during the examination, is there any way to fix it? Is there any way, once it gets to court or whatever, or does that presumption of validity stick no matter what?
That's an interesting question. And
Questions from the bench are presumed to be interesting.
I appreciate that, and I would love to take an hour over a cup of coffee or a cup of tea to discuss it in depth. But with the time that I have here, I would say that the presumption at this stage, at the stage of a preliminary injunction evaluation, the presumption has to control, right? The district court judge doesn't have necessarily before it a fully detailed record.
I would have thought you had said, yes, it sticks and they can overcome it, but the presumption remains because they could have challenged it at the outset. But we're not going there. Okay, let me ask you, on assuming the presumption applies, there's a second issue about the district court having applied a heightened standard that is beyond the standard she should have applied. And it sure sounds like talking about vigorous evidentiary requirements, either by direct or circumstantial evidence, seems stronger or different than preponderance of evidence. So is your view that she was right in the standard, or that it was harmless error because if you look at the details of her analysis, she did the right thing under the appropriate standard?
From SoClean's perspective, Your Honor, it is both SoClean's position that the district court judge applied the correct standard, which is preponderance of the evidence. However, if she applied a vigorous evidentiary standard, it was harmless error. From SoClean's perspective, I would say that the references to the vigorous evidentiary standard are essentially dicta in this memorandum and order. They are quoting the language from Yankee Candle in the district court's analysis of the secondary meaning evaluation, what she did to evaluate the secondary meaning. And in that context, she's just quoting the language of Yankee Candle, but in her actual analysis, in the district court judge's actual analysis of secondary meaning, she applies the correct preponderance of the evidence standard by, frankly, in Sunset, the defendant appellant seems to want to discredit all of SoClean's circumstantial or secondary meaning evidence, but only give weight to Sunset's own purported evidence with respect to secondary meaning. But that's not how it works. And the district court judge evaluated that. SoClean did have and does have substantial evidence that was before the district court judge and that's in the record of secondary meaning, including the length of SoClean sales, for example, the length of SoClean sales, the type and nature of its advertising. Frankly, the district court judge in her evaluation of, in the record of the transcript of the hearing on the preliminary injunction, the judge noted that Sunset's item is, the filter, is identical and indistinguishable. And Sunset has failed to discredit it to distinguish that filter in any way, which suggests, frankly, as does this appeal, that there is some secondary meaning in the filter itself. There's some reason that Sunset, defendant appellant, wants to market and sell that filter online without obvious branding that the filter comes from Sunset instead of SoClean. That suggests secondary meaning as well. So there is evidence before the court. There was evidence before the district court, also evidence in the appendix for this appeal that suggests there is ample or at least enough on SoClean's side evidence to find secondary meaning with respect to this trade dress, at least enough at the preliminary injunction stage to both support a finding of secondary meaning, and also then in conjunction with the presumptions of validity with respect to the trademark, defeat any challenge or defeat the, as the district court judge noted, equivocal evidence presented by Sunset with respect to that issue. So with respect to that, that's Sunset's position, or sorry, excuse me, that's SoClean's position.
You got your client mixed up.
I apologize for that. It's those S's, they get me. However, with that said, the fact remains that from SoClean's position, plaintiff appellee's position, the issue before the court is very clear. It's pretty straightforward on the law. It is an abuse of discretion standard, barring some clear error with respect to a finding of fact or an application of erroneous legal standard, which I mentioned from SoClean's position with respect to the legal standard. The district court judge applied the correct one, or to the extent that she may not have, it was harmless error given the evidence before the court. And with that, I frankly am not. I'm happy to address any other questions that the court may have or the panel may have, but I think it's fairly straightforward.
You think the issue was so clear?
I do think that the issue is clear. To be candid with the court, I do. All the district court judge said was, if Sunset wants to sell its filters online, it has to do so with markings that are obvious enough or evident enough or prominent enough to avoid a likelihood of confusion for the customer. And that is an appropriate, well-tailored decision that is well-reasoned in the district court's memorandum and order from SoClean's perspective.
Okay. Any more questions? Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll just attempt to briefly conclude here. So, we understand that there's an abuse of discretion standard here, but just again, our view is that the district court entered this preliminary injunction only by making errors of law and just focusing on the secondary meaning issue. We continue to believe that there were two errors of law. One, finding that it's the district court's hands were tied in reviewing what the trademark office did. And secondly, in applying a heightened standard of proof. And I would just underscore the language of the First Circuit in the Yankee Candle decision, where the court said, in the absence of any evidence that the claimed trade dress actually does identify a product source, the trade dress should not be entitled to protection. And that's consistent with the language of the Lanham Act Section 2F that requires evidence that the mark is used as a mark. It has to be evidence that the mark was used as a mark. And while we understand that there was a registration was issued here, the district court should have looked at the evidence and applying merely a preponderance of the evidence standard on the one hand, where there was a dearth of evidence of secondary meaning, on the other hand, some evidence that there was not secondary meaning, the district court should have corrected the trademark office's mistake and found that there was a likelihood of success that the registration would have been found invalid and not issued an injunction. With that, I'll conclude, and we respectfully ask the court to reverse the district court's entry of a preliminary injunction. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under submission.